Okay, picture this. You're on the wards, patient comes in, classic proximal muscle weakness, struggling to get out of a chair, raise their arms. Your first thought might be, aha, polymyositis.
Right, the classic go-to.
But what if I told you that polymyositis as a standalone diagnosis is, well, increasingly rare, and maybe focusing too much on it could lead you down the wrong path? Welcome to 88 Diagnoses. Today, we're taking a deep dive into the idiopathic inflammatory myopathies, or IMs.
It's a complex area.
It really is. Our mission here is to equip you with the latest knowledge so you can confidently differentiate these conditions, understand their unique features, and importantly, avoid common diagnostic pitfalls. We're going to unpack why terms like polymyositis are falling out of favor and what you should be looking for instead.
And what's truly fascinating, I think, is how rapidly our understanding has evolved here.
Definitely.
What we once saw as this broad, almost generic category is now, a refined spectrum of distinct diseases. Each one has its own clinical nuances, specific serologic markers, and really different management implications. So moving beyond that kind of one-size-fits-all label is absolutely crucial for good diagnosis and patient care.
So let's unpack that. Many of us, myself included, were taught polymyositis was a core IM, but the landscape has really shifted.
It has.
And as residents, we often cling to that first diagnosis that pops into our heads. I definitely remember thinking muscle weakness, elevated CKPM, done.
We've all been there.
Right. And then you see these atypical rashes, or maybe these crazy antibodies come back, and suddenly that neat little box just explodes. So, what is happening to polymyositis? Why is it on the outs?
Yeah, you're hitting on a fundamental change in how we categorize these things now. The IIMs, they now really encompass distinct entities like dermatomyositis, DM, myositis linked to the antisynthetase syndrome, immune-mediated necrotizing myopathy, IMNM, inclusion body myositis, IBM, and also myositis as part of a rheumatic disease overlap syndrome.
A whole family of conditions.
Exactly. And the reason polymyositis is fading is, well, it's pretty simple. Most cases that used to be labeled PM, they're now reclassified. They fit better as IMNM or antisynthetase syndrome, even if there's no rash or maybe an overlap myositis or sometimes even early misdiagnosed IBM. So true polymyositis is now thought to be quite rare, almost a diagnosis of exclusion.
So it's less about it disappearing and more about finding a much more precise fit within this new spectrum. Is that fair?
That's exactly it. And sometimes, because the biopsy might show minimal inflammatory cells, some people even prefer the broader term immune-mediated myopathy, or IMM.
Okay.
But the core message is clear. Don't just default to polymyositis anymore.
Got it.
If you can't remember everything from this part, remember this. Polymyositis is now largely a diagnosis of exclusion. Always consider the more specific IMM subtypes first.
Okay, so here's where it gets really interesting, right? Recognizing the nuances that actually distinguish these conditions, it's not just about generalized muscle weakness, it's about piecing together that full clinical picture. Let's walk through the major players you need to have on your radar.
Absolutely. The devil is really in the details with these. So first up, dermatomyositis, or DM.
Okay.
These patients usually present with that symmetric proximal muscle weakness,
Yeah.
elevated muscle ends, I'm sure, but the defining features, the characteristic skin findings.
The rash.
Exactly. Think Gautran papules over the knuckles, that classic heliotrope rash around the eyes, maybe a Schall sign on the back and shoulders.
So those skin signs are the immediate red flag, but what about the less obvious clues? Things under the surface.
That's where the specific autoantibodies really come in play. Things like anti-MI2, anti-NXP2, anti-TF1 gamma,
Yeah.
anti-SAE, anti-MDA5. These aren't just for confirming the diagnosis. They're almost like crystal balls for prognosis. Anti-TF1 gamma, for instance, is a big signal for an increased risk of cancer.
Wow.
Whereas anti-MDA5 is strongly linked to interstitial lung disease, sometimes severe,
Yeah.
even clinically amyopathic DM. That's where patients have the skin findings without obvious muscle weakness.
Right, key of ADM.
Exactly. So these antibodies can directly shape your early management, maybe triggering immediate cancer screening, for example.
Huge implications.
Definitely. Next, let's talk about the antisynthetase syndrome.
Okay.
This one's defined by having anti-aminoacyl tRNA synthetase antibodies. Anti-JO1 is the most common one you'll see.
Right.
The crucial takeaway here is the combination. You get inflammatory myopathy plus these specific extramuscular features.
Like what?
We're talking significant interstitial lung disease, those distinctive mechanics hands,
mm-hmm.
you know, that fissured hyperkeratotic skin on the fingers.
Yeah, the crack skin.
Inflammatory arthritis, Raynaud phenomenon. And unlike DM with certain antibodies, there's generally no increased risk of malignancy associated with this syndrome itself.
Okay, so mechanics hands, classic buzzword there. What about patients who present just like we used to think of, polymyositis weakness, high CK but no rash? Is something else going on?
That brings us right to immune-mediated necrotizing myopathy, or IMNM. Clinically, it does look a lot like that old polymyositis idea, symmetric proximal weakness, no rash. But the key distinction is found on the muscle biopsy. You see extensive muscle necrosis, but with a relative paucity of inflammatory infiltrate. It's different under the microscope.
So lots of muscle damage, not as much inflammation driving it, seemingly?
Kind of. And the associated antibodies are important here, too. Anti-HMGCR, which you probably know can be statin-induced but can also be spontaneous.
Right, the statin connection.
And anti-SRP, which is often linked to pretty severe disease, very high CK levels, but usually fewer extramuscular issues.
Okay, that's a key one to distinguish them.
For sure. Fourth main type, inclusion body myositis, or IBM. This one is really quite unique.
How so?
Well, epidemiologically, it tends to affect older individuals, often men more than women. The onset is generally insidious, slow progression over months or years.
Slower burn.
Exactly.
Okay.
And the weakness pattern is critical and often asymmetric. Preferential involvement of the deep finger flexors in the hands, so they might complain about difficulty buttoning shirts or opening jars, combined with relative sparing of the deltoids.
Hmm.
That pattern is really suggestive.
Finger flexors weak, shoulders relatively strong.
Got it.
Oh.
And on biopsy, you're looking for rimmed vacuoles and inclusions within the muscle fibers, signs of abnormal protein buildup.
Mm-hmm.
Critically, and this is really important clinically, IBM is generally unresponsive to immunotherapy.
So you don't want to miss this and start someone on high-dose steroids thinking it's, say, PM or IMNM.
Precisely. It won't help and just exposes them to side effects.
Okay. And the last category.
And finally, the overlap syndromes. This is basically when inflammatory myopathy coexists with another established systemic rheumatic disease. Think SLE, scleroderma, MCTD, RA, Sjögren's. The muscle involvement here is often milder, sometimes even subclinical.
Right, part of a bigger picture.
Exactly. So here's an on-the-words tip. In any patient presenting with new-onset muscle weakness, always specifically ask about and look for hand symptoms like difficulty with fine motor tasks, buttoning shirts, opening things, and also check carefully for those characteristic skin findings like Gautran's, heliotrope rash, or mechanics hands. These subtle clues can immediately help narrow your differential towards DM, antisynthetase, or maybe even IBM.
Great tip. Focus on the hands and skin.
If you can't remember everything from this section, remember this. Look beyond just general muscle weakness. The combination of specific extramuscular features, unique patterns of weakness, and those associated antibodies are your roadmap to defining the distinct IMM subtype and moving away from that generic polymyositis label.
Okay, so we've got the subtypes mapped out conceptually. Now, how do we actually confirm our suspicions? For us residents, labs don't always, you know, perfectly fit the textbook pictures, and it can feel like trying to piece together a really complex puzzle.
Totally.
I've definitely been the resident who ordered a full liver workup for elevated AST and ALT, only to realize, oops, it was all coming from muscle breakdown. Classic mistake.
Oh, yeah. That's a pitfall we've all seen, or maybe even made.
Yeah.
When it comes to the diagnostic arsenal, muscle enzymes are usually that first clue, right?
Mm-hmm.
Creatine kinase, CK, is your go-to. It's often sky high, you know, more than 10 times the upper limit of normal in untreated active disease. But, and this is a crucial nuance, CK levels can actually be normal in up to 20% of DM patients.
20%? Wow.
Yeah. And in IBM, they're often only mildly elevated, usually less than 10 times the upper limit. So you can't rely on a normal or slightly high CK to rule things out.
Good point. What about other enzymes?
Aldolase can sometimes be helpful. It might be elevated even when the CK is normal, especially in dermatomyositis. So it's often worth checking both if your suspicion is high.
Yeah.
And here's another on-the-words tip building on your point. If you see unexplained elevated AST and ALT, especially if the AST is higher than the ALT, always check a CK level before you jump to conclusions about liver disease or pursue an unnecessary liver workup or biopsy.
Right. AST is in muscle, too.
Exactly. And also, checking a GGT can help differentiate because GGT is hepatic, not muscular.
Smart. Okay. Enzymes are step one. What about those antibodies we talked about, the MSAs?
Right. The myositis-specific autoantibodies, or MSAs. These are invaluable, truly. They help with phenotyping, figuring out which subtype you're dealing with, and also with prognostication. They tell you what to expect.
Like the cancer risk or prognosis?
Precisely. Anti-MI2, for example, generally suggests a better prognosis, maybe more responsive to treatment, while anti-TIF1 gamma really raises those cancer concerns. However, you have to remember there are limitations.
Okay, what are those?
Well, first, the panels can take weeks to come back, which isn't helpful acutely. And second, they're only positive in maybe 20 to 40% of all myositis patients.
Oh, so a lot of patients will be negative.
A significant number. Hmm. So a negative panel absolutely does not rule out myositis. Clinical judgment remains paramount here. You have to weigh the whole picture.
So they're guides, really useful guides, but not the definitive yes or no in every single case. What else is in the toolkit?
Yeah.
Imaging, biopsies.
Exactly. For additional studies, electromyography or EMG is helpful. It can identify myopathic changes, which helps distinguish muscle disease from nerve problems like neuropathies.
Mm-hmm.
It can also help pinpoint which muscle might be best to biopsy, although you generally don't want to biopsy a muscle that was just stuck with an EMG needle.
Right, inflammation from the needle stick.
Yeah, and skeletal muscle MRI is increasingly used and very valuable. It can show inflammation, edema, even fat replacement or fibrosis across large muscle areas. This helps overcome the potential sampling error you might get with just a single small biopsy site.
Makes sense. See the bigger picture.
And it's also excellent for guiding where to do that biopsy, picking an actively inflamed muscle.
Okay, so that brings us to the muscle and skin biopsy, still the gold standard sometimes.
Often, yes. A muscle biopsy becomes critical if there's no typical DM rash or if the MSA panel is negative or confusing. It's often the only definitive way to distinguish IMNM from what we used to call PM, or to confirm IBM.
And you're looking for specific patterns.
Very specific histologic features. Like in DM, you often see inflammation around the blood vessels and at the periphery of the muscle bundles, perivesicular inflammation. In IMNM, it's that prominent necrosis with surprisingly few inflammatory cells. And in IBM, you're hunting for those distinctive rimmed vacuoles and inclusions within the muscle fibers themselves.
Got it. What about skin biopsy?
Skin biopsy is really helpful if the rash isn't classic DM, or if you suspect clinically amyopathic DM. It can confidently distinguish a DM rash from many common mimickers, things like psoriasis, atopic dermatitis, seborrheic dermatitis. But one key point, it cannot reliably differentiate DM skin changes from those seen in lupus erythematosus.
Ah, okay, good distinction. So they can look similar histologically sometimes.
They can. So the bottom line for diagnostics, muscle enzyme levels can be misleading. Don't hang your hat on them alone. MSAs are powerful guides for prognosis and phenotype, but aren't always positive. And biopsy, both muscle and sometimes skin, remains crucial, especially for definitively distinguishing IMNM and IBM.
Okay, so what does all this mean for us on the front lines then? With all these overlapping symptoms, these subtle signs, how do we accurately classify and differentiate these conditions day to day, especially when there are established criteria floating around?
Yeah, that's an important question. How do we integrate all this information practically? The ELRAXR 2017 classification criteria are definitely useful tools to know about.
Right, the official criteria.
Right. Their main purpose, really, was to provide uniformity for clinical trials, making sure researchers are studying comparable groups of patients. They include a web-based calculator, and they do have high sensitivity and specificity for identifying probable IM overall.
Okay, so they help define the broad category.
Exactly. But it's vital to understand their limitations in clinical practice. They're really imperfect for diagnosing an individual patient. They weren't designed primarily for that. And they don't yet have enough data to reliably classify some specific subgroups, like IMNM or antisynthetase syndrome, within the criteria themselves.
Hmm.
One key feature, though, is the classification tree approach they use. It highlights that if you have those pathognomonic skin eruptions like Clear-Gottron's papules or a heliotrope rash, you can actually classify the patient as having DM without even needing muscle biopsy data, according to the criteria.
Ah, so the skin can be that specific sometimes for classification purposes.
For the classification criteria, yes. But again, for actual diagnosis in a complex case, you still need your clinical judgment.
So they're a good guide for the broad category, maybe helpful for research thinking, but we still need our clinical acumen for the specific diagnosis. And I imagine the differential diagnosis for muscle weakness must be absolutely immense.
Oh, it is. And that's maybe one of the most fascinating and challenging parts here. The differential diagnosis for muscle weakness is truly extensive. You absolutely must consider things like infectious myopathies, various drug-induced myopathies.
Statins, steroids.
Exactly. Plus sarcoidosis involving muscle, amyloid myopathy, hypothyroid myopathy that's a common mimicker. Then you have the muscular dystrophies, inherited metabolic myopathies, motor neuron diseases like ALS, and neuromuscular junction disorders like myasthenia gravis. The list goes on.
Wow.
And it's really critical to distinguish true muscle weakness, the hallmark of IMs, from conditions like polymyalgia rheumatica or fibromyalgia. Those are primarily pain syndromes, not diseases of muscle weakness itself.
Big difference, weakness versus pain.
Huge difference. And just to reinforce that skin biopsy point again, it's great for distinguishing a DM rash from many other common skin rashes. But remember, it's not reliable for telling DM apart from cutaneous lupus.
Okay, crucial point to remember.
So your key takeaway for the diagnostic process overall: classification criteria are primarily research tools. Real-world diagnosis demands a broad differential, careful history and exam, and thoughtful correlation of clinical findings with labs, imaging, and often biopsy results to avoid misdiagnosis.
All right, got to put all the pieces together. Okay, you've absorbed a ton of critical information here. Now let's try to put it to the test with a realistic case study, because honestly, that's how we truly solidify our learning on 88 diagnoses. Imagine you're on call.
Let's do it.
Okay. A 68-year-old male presents. He's got a 4-month history of progressive symmetric proximal muscle weakness. He's finding it difficult to climb stairs, difficult to stand up from a seated position. His CK comes back over 5,000 IOL, markedly elevated. He reports no rash.
Okay, high CK, no rash, proximal weakness.
Your first thought might be that old label, polymyositis. However, on closer examination, you notice he casually mentions some mild difficulty buttoning his shirts, and maybe you notice some fissuring on his fingertips.
Okay. The plot thickens.
Right. So given that initial presentation, high CK, no rash, symmetric proximal weakness, what are the top IMs you're now seriously considering, moving beyond just polymyositis? And how do those subtle hand symptoms immediately make you broaden that differential?
Okay, this is a great case because it highlights how those subtle details are critical. The high CK and no rash initially. Yeah, it screams IMNM. That's probably high on the list.
Mm-hmm.
But the difficulty buttoning his shirts and those fissured fingertips, classic mechanics hands, that's a huge twist. That immediately brings antisynthetase syndrome right up the list.
Okay.
And, you know, given his age, 68, and the somewhat insidious onset over 4 months, you also have to keep inclusion body myositis, IBM, in the back of your mind, even though the CK is quite high for typical IBM.
Mm-hmm.
But those hand symptoms are key.
Exactly. So digging into those hand symptoms, what specific type of muscle weakness pattern should you really probe for regarding his hands, beyond just him saying difficulty buttoning?
You'd want to specifically ask about and test the deep finger flexors. Can he make a tight fist?
Yeah.
Is the grip weak, specifically in flexing the tips of his fingers? That pattern, maybe along with some subtle wrist flexor weakness, especially if asymmetric, combined with relative sparing of the deltoids, is really a hallmark feature pointing towards IBM.
Perfect. So considering the high CK, no rash, but now adding these specific hand symptoms, mechanics hands, potential finger flexor weakness, what critical labs and maybe imaging would you prioritize next to really nail down this diagnosis? And what specific antibodies are you definitely sending based on all his symptoms now?
Okay, so labs. Definitely send the myositis antibody panel,
right?
But specifically looking for anti-tRNA synthetase antibodies, especially
yeah.
anti-JO1 because of the mechanics hands.
Right.
You'd also still want to check for the INM antibodies, anti-HMGCR and anti-SRP, given the high CK and no rash initially.
Cover those bases.
Absolutely. And imaging. A muscle MRI would be really valuable here. It could show patterns of muscle involvement, maybe asymmetric inflammation, maybe selective involvement of finger flexors or sparing of deltoids that could strongly suggest IBM or another subtype and would absolutely guide where you want to do your biopsy.
Okay. And the final step, potentially. If you proceed to that muscle biopsy, what distinct histopathologic features are you telling the pathologist you're specifically looking for that would give you a definitive diagnosis and rule out that old concept of pure PM?
The biopsy becomes absolutely key here to differentiate. If it's IBM, you're looking for those characteristic rimmed vacuoles and protein inclusions within the muscle fibers, often with endomysial inflammation.
Okay.
If it turns out to be IMNM, you'd expect to see that prominent muscle fiber necrosis, but with a surprising paucity of inflammatory cells.
Right, the necrosis-inflammation mismatch.
Exactly. And if it somehow turned out to be antisynthetase syndrome myositis presenting without a rash, you might see more perivascular necrosis or inflammation, perhaps somewhat similar to DM, but without the skin findings clinically. The biopsy directly visualizes the specific pathology that differentiates these conditions far better than just PM. You know, the journey to diagnosing these IMMs, it's really less about just memorizing a checklist, isn't it? It's much more about recognizing these distinct patterns, these unique constellations of symptoms, even the subtle ones that patients might not volunteer initially. The most accurate diagnosis so often lies hidden in those details beyond just the obvious muscle weakness.
That's a great final thought. We really hope this deep dive into the shifting world of IM on 88 diagnoses helps you approach your next patient with some newfound clarity and confidence. Take these insights onto your rounds, really ask those specific questions about hands and skin, look for those subtle signs, and hey, share your experiences. We'd love to hear how you apply this knowledge in your practice. Until next time, keep diving deep.